I'll start by saying your TED Talk is exceptional.
Thank you very much.
I really enjoyed it. It's really, really good. Fascinating.
Thank you. Absolutely fascinating.
Especially the anecdotes about being in the supermarket when you were 3 or 4 and asking for a banana.
Yeah, yeah.
Potentially being looked at as a racist baby.
Yeah.
But yeah, being on an accent. It's like, that is fair play. Really, really good.
Welcome to Series 2 of Tell Them, a podcast hosted by Tamasha in partnership with Transmission Roundhouse.
This podcast is a space where global majority movers and shakers reflect and critique work that lies across our cultural spectrum.
My name is Tue and I am the digital producer for Tamasha.
My name is Samia and I'm a producer at Tamasha, and you are tuning in to episode 4, where we are going to discuss what does it mean to be mixed race in Britain today. If you have not already, check out last week's episode where the brilliant Rowan Hassani-Mokloski spoke to Nadia Nadif about the absence of North African voices in Britain, reviewing the mini-series Oeskine, currently available to watch on Disney+.
So. Breathe it in. Count yourself down.
None of you can see this, but Samia is my director in podcast voicing. So if you like
hire
what
me.
You hear, if you like what you hear, please hire her. Thank you, director. Back to today's episode. We are joined by one of my favourite people, Jude Christian. And she is with us remotely on Zoom. I am about to read June's fantastic bio, and there are a few words in there that I may not be able to pronounce, so please forgive me, especially those who are savvy to German. Jude is a British, Malaysian, Chinese Manx writer, director, maker, and sometimes performer working in theatre, film, opera, and community arts. Her play Nanjing, about militant pacifism and mixed heritage families, was developed at the Yard and selected for the 2021 Stücke Market at Berlin Theatertreffen. There we go. Did I do it? I don't know. You tell me. Jude's upcoming projects include a short film, Titus Andronicus at Shakespeare's Globe, Jack and the Beanstalk at the Lyric Hammersmith, and she is also currently completing a graduate diploma in law. How she does all of this, I have no idea. Over to you, Jude.
Thanks very much. And yeah, it's an absolute pleasure to be here with these two wonderful people. So I think I've got some sort of introductory questions to kind of ease us into conversation. But I think before we do that, it'd just be lovely to know Richie and Jasser just a little bit about who you are and what you do in the world. So Richie, do you want to go first?
Yeah, of course. Hello, my name is Richie Driss. Well, that's the sort of abbreviated version of my exceptionally long monologue-esque name. My full name is Richard Lucien Driss-Laron, but we'll come on to that later. I am currently a Blue Peter presenter, and I also present, I've presented a documentary on BT Sports around goalkeepers. I presented for Grime Daily. I presented for Joe Dakota UK. I've done a lot of all sorts of bits and bobs and dabbling here and there.
Beautiful. Great. And Jasser, how about you?
My name is Jasser Alawalia. I'm an actor, writer and filmmaker. Yeah, I've been in stuff like Some Girls, BBC Three, cropped up in Peaky Blinders for a couple of episodes. And then, yeah, I had a sort of realisation and went at sort of the culmination of my own sort of journey with my mixed identity in 2019 when I articulated the hashtag Both Not Half. Turned that into a TED Talk in early 2020. I did a documentary for BBC One called Am I English, which came out earlier this year. And yeah, I'm currently in the process of turning Both Not Half into a book, which is what I'm working on at the moment.
Gorgeous. So you've both sort of teased this subject anyway in your introductions. And I thought as soon as an area is sort of headed introduction in relation to this topic, I was like, wow, just an instant minefield. I have two questions. I was going to let you choose, but I think I'll just do both of them. So I was going to start with the mildly stressful question. How do you answer, where are you from? And then I thought I'd follow it up with what actually for me has become the mega stressful question, which is, could you audio describe your appearance for people who are listening to this podcast? So, Richie, you look like a man who's game for some difficult questions.
Of course, yeah. Do you know what? I'm not going to lie. I take a little bit of glee in answering the where are you from question, depending on who asks me that question. If they are a white male, clearly white male, I will sort of pause and sort of look at them and sort of, I'll make my pause long enough for them to maybe start feeling a little bit uncomfortable and then probably just launch into my answer. I do take a little bit of glee from that. So to answer your question, if someone asks me where I'm from, I would say, well, I was born and So I was born in St Albans in Hertfordshire, but then I moved around a lot as a kid, ended up settling in a place called Harpenden, which is in between St Albans and Luton, then moved to Luton, then I ended up in Manchester, and I am born to a Anglo mum, white mum, and Algerian dad. Is that a satisfactory answer?
That is extremely satisfactory. Okay, and do you want to do part two if you feel that there's any further expansion required?
Oh, well, part two, yeah.
Yeah, if you were to describe your appearance as well as what you're wearing, does that open anything up differently for you?
Well, again, describing my appearance, it depends on what season we're in, to be honest with you. If we're winter, I'm a probably just off-white, little bit grey guy with dark features. I could be someone who's of Algerian descent who looks really ill and needs some sunshine. Whereas in the summer, I am possibly a white guy with a really banging tan. And again, when I've had this conversation with people in the past, it depends on who the person is, you know, as to what they think I am as well. And when I've been abroad on holiday a few years ago, I was in Brazil and Colombia and I blended in with the locals. But then my mate who I was with is, you know, same colour as these very white walls, blonde hair, blue eyes, looks like the blonde hair, blue eyed guy from One Direction. And everyone was fascinated by him. Fascinated, because there's no one with blonde hair and blue eyes in Latin America.
Yeah, brilliant. Yeah, and as you say, I think it, I mean, you've mentioned the word glee quite a lot. This feels like the real deep nuance, Jasser, of Both Not Half. So I hope you're taking notes for your book.
Yeah.
So same questions to you, Jasser. Like, how do you approach the question, where are you from? And how do you describe your appearance when you're called upon to do so?
So it's interesting. So I'm going to start with the second part. I look very white, and that tends to be, that's consistently been my experience, that people tend to see me as white, and that's been a big part of my journey. And as a result of that, I actually don't get asked, where are you from? Like, that's not usually part of the introductions. However, once my name comes up, then it becomes a question of, yeah, where's your name from? Which I guess is like another way of saying, like, where are you from? Like, how did you end up with that name? I was once rushed into A&E and there was a South Asian lady who was logging me in on reception, and she took my name down and she was like, where did you get that name? It was like I'd like stolen it from someone. And that usually precipitates the conversation of where I'm from. So in terms of my heritage, my dad's Punjabi, was born in India, moved to the UK when he was a kid. My mum's white English. But for me, I mean, I'm from the Midlands. I was born in Coventry, grew up in Leicester. And then I moved down to London for uni when I was about 18, 19. And I think, you know, really, for me, what I've been really trying to embrace now is that I'm from lots of places, multiple places. I don't feel like I have to pin it down to one particular thing. I'm very confident expressing myself as being like, well, I'm from England, I'm from Britain, I'm from India. In some ways, I'm also from Pakistan, because my grandmother was born in Lalpur, as it was then known, pre-partition. So, yeah, I'm from lots of different places.
Lovely. And I suppose the topic of this episode is about being mixed race in Britain. And so I wondered if there's anything, Richie, you mentioned having different answers depending on context. Is there anything that feels really particular about answering those questions in Britain as opposed to answering in any other country of the world?
I guess with Britain's recent history of not necessarily being the most receptive to people of different cultures, to put it mildly, I guess it depends on where particularly I am. I went to university in Aberystwyth in Wales, right on the coast, which, as you can probably imagine, isn't the most ethnically diverse place in the world. And I've got friends that are dotted all around Wales because of that. And even just at the weekend just gone, I was at a gig, Pete Tong gig, in North Wales, Colwyn Bay in North Wales. And this doesn't always sort of strike me, but I remember being there and being struck as to, see, if one of these people sort of asked me where I was from, I'd be a little bit more worried about answering this question than if, say, I was in London or Luton. Do you know what I mean? And also, I've been on the receiving end of a racist assault when in my time in Wales as well. A couple of examples of that as well. So, yeah, I guess that does come into my mind a little bit. I will still answer. I'll always answer the same, but I will. There'll be a little bit more trepidation, I guess, depending on where in the UK I am. Which to be fair, is actually quite judgmental of me.
I think it sounds like it comes from a place of being really aware that people can be asking that question for really different reasons. My mum's Chinese and has lived in this country for 40 years, but has this tendency for many reasons, some of which I think are cultural, some of which I think are to do with personality, some of which are to do with being the age that she is and not really caring about social niceties anymore. We'll essentially just will very, very freely ask people where they're from. And it's a question that she asks, particularly she'll ask East Asians, obviously, because she wants to know if they're from Malaysia, where she's from. But we'll ask anyone who isn't white with a British accent. And there are so many times when I have to sort of repress the urge to rugby tackle her to the floor. I think because you realise instantly how people have to pass why that question's being asked to them, but you have to read context. And anyone who's asked that question, particularly anyone in this country who isn't white, doesn't speak with a British accent, doesn't have a sort of classically English Western sounding name, has to make some quite quick calculations about why that question's being asked, what position they're in, and where that conversation might lead. So yeah
Jess, I don't know about you, but I mean, I think I would think more than twice about asking someone that question, as fascinated as I will be. And recently on Blue Peter, we had some skaters in, and there was one guy who was one of the skaters, and I was thinking, I get this weird random feeling I can't describe, that he's definitely North African, if not Algerian. I couldn't explain it. And then afterwards, he followed me on Instagram, followed him back, and I saw an Algerian flag in his bio, and I was like, I knew it, but I can't explain why, but I knew it. I didn't ask him there and then because of that exact reason. And I guess it's how I worry about how people would perceive me. As you know, if they perceive me as just a white guy who's come back from holiday recently, then why are you asking that question? I don't know about yourself.
Yeah, I think I'm okay with it as a question. I think it's really to do with intent and context, and I don't think there's any blanket. You know, everything we're talking about is how do we live and understand ambiguity and uncertainty in a world that really wants to just lock everything into very sort of binary either or categories. And I think that is the thing we're grappling with this question. And I think so if we're asking that question, it's a question I sometimes ask myself. And it's a question, you know, if I'm hearing that question from other people of colour, then it's like you tend to know that it's coming from a point of trying to find connection, sense of universal experience. And I've tried to, I'm very aware that there are certain social contexts in which it triggers a sort of survival instinct, and so you're like, is this safe, where's this going? But sometimes, you know, you never know what because I'm just very aware now, because of the way I look, my mixedness isn't necessarily on show, that there are other people who have the same experience as me. Like, you know, I did a talk recently about Both Not Half, and there was a woman who was in her 50s, I think, who was miking me up before I went on stage. And she had a very sort of posh English accent, and I hadn't really had any thought or made any connection about how she may or may not connect to my experience. And I think, I mean, she didn't ask me, but like, had she asked me where are you from, I would have been maybe a bit cautious. But actually, after I'd come off stage, she was chatting to me, and she was quite emotional. And she started explaining to me how she'd grown up in Jamaica as a kid up until about the age of 4 or 5, and then moved to the UK and had a very strong Jamaican accent, and had been basically was bullied mercilessly because of it, and she totally changed how she sounded and behaved because of that. And it just made me realize that, yeah, there's so much complexity and multiplicity in the world, and I think it's very difficult. I would hesitate to sort of say that's a question you should or shouldn't be asking. I think it really just comes down to those very specific interactions and what's actually being felt and intended in those moments.
I mean, Jasa, that brings us around really beautifully to your TED Talk, Both Not Half. And I think that just that saying, it encapsulates something so beautiful. I was working with somebody recently who very similarly was talking about the idea of being 200%.
Nice.
People who have that feeling of straddling multiple spaces, and that there's something missing, or in themselves or in their lives. And there's something really, I mean, obviously the ego in me loves the idea, particularly standing at 5'2" as I do. But I suppose, same for you, Richie, when you're talking about connection, and I suppose that sort of that invisible thing where you're going, I just know this guy's Algerian and I don't quite know how to broach it. Do you have that feeling of searching for people who either just understand that experience of mixed heritage, or who specifically, you know, have a foot in like an ethnicity or a culture that belongs to you? Yeah. Do you feel like that's a sort of part of your daily experience, is looking for people who you can find those links, those connections with?
It's a really strange and possibly unique sense of perspective that I have with regards to finding that connection, because I didn't even know that I was Algerian until I was about 14, maybe 15 or 16, basically far, far later than I feel I should have. But then, and I've never been, and I know, unlike yourself, Jasser, who's fully, you know, immersed in the culture and in the language and in everything, I am the polar opposite. I am hugely, unwillingly ignorant, but hugely ignorant about where I'm from. I don't even think I could pronounce the place that my dad was born in properly. But, and I've never been, and I never met any of his family, so I know, when I say I know nothing, I know I can name about three of the players in the Algeria football team, and that's just from watching the African Cup of Nations. And one of them plays for Man City, so that's heartbreaking because I'm a Man United fan. But anyway, moving very swiftly on, I went to Morocco for work, and there was more than anywhere I've ever been, I felt this sort of intangible connection, especially as I was with some clearly white colleagues. And in Morocco, they're all hustlers. They're all trying to, you know, get as money out of you to show you directions to places left, right and centre. And on this one occasion, I led the way and they started speaking to me in Arabic and then in French. And my French is a little bit better than my Arabic, but that's saying absolutely nothing at all. And then they said, oh, where are you from? And I said, my dad's Algerian, because I was comfortable enough there in that situation to jump straight to the chase and be like, yeah, my dad's Algerian. And they were like, oh, neighbours, right, ignore the directions I just gave you to this restaurant. Come to this restaurant. This restaurant's so much better. And no, put your money away. Don't worry about it. And I was like, yes, my guys. Yeah, that sort of sense of connection. If and when I do find it, it's wonderful, but I don't feel like I necessarily go on the hunt for it. Like, I don't hang out in Finsbury Park in London, which has got a huge Algerian community, although I sort of wish I could, because if I did and I found that connection, then I know I'd face the really awkward questions of, so tell us about where you're from in Algeria, where your dad's from, and this, that, and the other. And I would be like, I'm sorry, I don't know. I'm just here for some, I was going to name a food, but I can't even think of one. Exactly. I rest my case.
Yeah.
So, as far as finding that connection, if I stumble across it, amazing. I don't actively go looking for it, although I feel like I should.
Yeah. And that can be a really delicate thing, I think, that feeling that you're going to get quizzed suddenly. Do you know what I mean? And that, I got told by my uncle recently that I pronounced my own middle name wrong.
Oh, wow.
Soz. I don't switch accent in order to say my own complete name in one go. So continue saying it the way that English people say it. But I think I have a similar experience to you, Richie, in that I was brought up knowing about my heritage, but I learned nothing in terms of language. I know very little about the culture. I didn't live in those countries. And I think there are times where I can't work out still the extent this comes from other people or it comes from yourself. But there's a part of your brain that's going, I don't want to mess up. Like, I don't want to somehow confuse my sense of who I am by failing some kind of cosmic test that proves that I belong there.
And I feel like I'm sort of representing, as, because there's not a huge Algerian contingent in the UK. So I feel like I'm sort of representing, especially given the platform that I have. So I feel like I'd be really letting my community, so to speak, down by not even being able to, you know, pronounce the name of where my dad's from correctly. So
I think there's a really unhelpful tendency to want to test people on their heritage as a way to sort of validate them. And this is something that I've come to really resist. And I was caught out. So I did, it turned out okay in the end. But I was on BBC Asia Network when I was promoting the upcoming Brit Asia Music Awards, which I was hosting. And one of the features that they sprung on me was basically a Punjabi vocab test live on air. To be like, okay, like, how Punjabi are you really? And then they were like, here are some words. Thankfully, I got them all and I tried to make it fun and entertaining. But it was in that moment, I'd only just come to the realization at that point that I'm going to refuse to participate in these tests because I think firstly, it was great. I got all the words. I felt great. I was very relieved.
Yeah, I bet.
But I don't think you need to be an authority on a culture in order to have, you know, to be legitimate and valid in your identity and to own that identity. I think I've been very lucky that because I speak the language, spent time in India, grew up with my Indian grandparents, my claim to my heritage is sort of irrefutable, and that's given me a lot of power. But I would hate for that to have to be, you know, you would have to be that knowledgeable or ingrained in the culture for you to feel like you can have a sense of connection and to feel belonging. Yeah, I think, yeah.
It's really nice to hear Jasser say that because, as I said, like we covered, I'm the polar opposite. And because I know so little, I don't feel like, I will say it, you know, if people ask me where I'm from, I will of course say it because they've asked the question, but I also don't feel like I'm qualified to be able to claim that title, which I know I shouldn't think that ever, because as you said, like, you shouldn't have to pass a test to be able to claim where you're from. And yet, because it's such a huge gap, I find it to be such a huge gap in my being, I do.
I think it also, like, reveals a real insecurity in the people, because it's often people within your community or the heritage that you're claiming that they're acting like sort of gatekeepers to that identity. And I think it sort of reveals their insecurity that they don't feel that they can welcome you into the community as one of them, because they're, and I think it's almost this sense of like preservation, that you don't want anything to change. You don't want to sort of introduce anything that might, you know, the phrase like dilute often gets used. And actually it's not, it's that there's just very, you know, there are probably lots of people who consider themselves English and only English who, you know, if you give them a test on English history and culture, they probably wouldn't do very well. So, you know, it's not really a great way of doing it. So I think, yeah, I think it's really on all of us to accept that and acknowledge that and champion that and be like, yeah, it doesn't matter. You don't have to be able to speak the language. You don't necessarily have to know the food or be able to pronounce the words correctly. You know, if that's part of who you are, that's part of who you are, and your experience of being that culture is very valid, and it's part of the future of that culture. That's like, you know, what you gotta, you know, you can connect with it and you can seek it out and you can learn, but, you know, that should be encouraged and not criticized. And I think it's really interesting you're saying about the pronunciation of your middle name. One of the things, I think in a weird way, the reason I was able to really connect with my Punjabi heritage growing up and the language particularly was almost because of my whiteness. Because there was no expectation on me to learn, to be that connected, to be that ingrained, it was almost like anything I did was great. Any mistakes I made were sort of like ignored. I just got affirmation, affirmation, affirmation. And so, you know, I'll admit my Punjabi isn't as perfect as people sometimes like to make out that it is. I make mistakes in grammar, and believe me, there are plenty of people on Instagram and Twitter who like pointing that out. But, you know, I don't really care. And that's because I got this affirmation, and I find it heartbreaking when I speak to like my brown friends who say that, yeah, I used to speak it when I was a kid, but, you know, I used to make mistakes and like my family or people would take the mick out of me and like make me feel really bad about it, and so I just stopped speaking. And I'm like, that's so awful that that's how people behave. But because I was this little white boy, the fact that I was dancing Bhangra, eating with my hands, speaking the language, regardless of whether I was, you know, making mistakes, I just got affirmation. And so for me growing up, the feeling was everything Punjabi makes me feel awesome. And so I really pursued it.
Beautiful.
And I think, yeah, we can really, I hope we can learn from that. And I think, you know, for people, parents, regardless of whether they're mixed kids or not. It's just give that affirmation that you don't have to be correcting them at every corner because of your own insecurities. Like, make them feel joy and they will pursue it of their own accord.
Yeah. That's really beautiful. And I wanna come back round to what you said as well, just about how this how that topic of conversation leads us into thinking about the future. The way that you framed your journey around sort of going back and like relearning the Punjabi that you had as a kid in adulthood as being like a really personal journey, as you say, rather than being about sort of performance for the benefit of other people or trying to pass some kind of societal test, that it becomes this sort of lifelong search, which I was like, I've tried to learn Chinese and then I stop because it's embarrassing when I don't know, or I get worried about what it means to be a representative of a community. So I suppose before coming back to that thought about the future, I just wanted to dwell in, as people specifically living in Britain, who were raised in Britain and who have this mixed identity, I suppose, what do we do with the privileges that we have? Like, I'm very aware, for example, that that there's a huge amount of time and investment at the moment, particularly in the arts, about platforming unheard voices. And I found myself in situations, for example, where I was once asked to speak on a panel for women of colour. And I was in this really complicated situation where I was like, I absolutely define myself as global majority. I absolutely define myself as Black, Asian, minority, ethnic, despite the problems with that phrase. Sometimes as a shorthand, because my face and my name look white British, if people ask me my ethnicity, if people ask me things, I'll just say I'm Chinese, because it's a really quick way to go, I have mixed heritage, because I demonstrably don't look Chinese.
Right, yeah.
But it was interesting being asked to speak on this panel for women of colour, because I was like, I'm not a woman of colour and I don't think that I can occupy that space. I'm absolutely up for talking about multiple cultures. I'm absolutely up for talking about East Asian culture, but I don't feel that it's on me to occupy that space that has been offered, or an opportunity that's been offered specifically to a person of colour who I think has moved through this country with a very different experience. And obviously, as you guys have discussed, you know, we all have differing ways in which people read us or people read identity in us. But I wondered what your thoughts are on specifically having that mixed identity, specifically having feet in different cultures. What are the privileges that we enjoy? And also, therefore, what do you think the responsibility is on us? Also, as culture makers, you know, as people who are, you guys are, you're out there, you're visible, you're telling stories. What do you think we can do with this identity that we all have?
As I said a little bit earlier, that depending on who you ask and depending on where I am and what season it is as well, I'm very aware that, like, I've got my mum's facial features. Like, if I stand next to my mum, people can tell that we're mother and son, whereas with my dad it was not so much the case. So with regards to, if you know, if I was asked to speak on a panel with regards to diversity and ethnicity, I'd be the same as yourself. I'd feel quite uncomfortable about it. But I'd also be aware, I'd also like to think that there would be a reason why I was approached in the first place as well. But I would go in personally very transparent and say, listen, like, I'm sure there is someone who could occupy that space ahead of me. Yeah, and also with regards to sort of, because of the way that I look, affirming my multi-ethnicity, I do feel that I need to compensate for the fact that people will look at me as, because of my mom's facial features, as a white guy with a tan. So we did a piece on racism on Blue Peter in March, April 2020, and I felt the need to overtly say that I have been on the receiving end of racism myself to get rid of any sort of potential, what are you doing? Because I remember at the time I wrote and led that speech that we did. I pitched it to the producers and the editor, and I led it, so to speak, because at the time there was Lindsay on the show who's white, and then there's Waxy on the show who's very, very, very new, who's black. So she didn't feel necessarily comfortable stepping into that space and talking about something as serious as that. So I led the way, but I felt that I definitely 100% needed to talk about my experiences to be able to actually affirm them to anyone watching who may be on the fence about what's he doing talking about this or leading this so impassionately. I have no idea if that even answers your question, to be honest.
No, I think absolutely. Jasser, any thoughts from you?
Yeah, I think I've come to learn that I don't need to make other people feel comfortable, and that they can just figure it out for themselves. But I've had to learn this, and because, you know, I was encouraged by my friends to stand for election to the Race Equality Committee within my union, Equity. And I felt a bit weird about it at first, but then I spoke to people and who were already on the committee, and particularly Beck Bowie, and she really encouraged me to do so. And then I spoke to people once I was on the committee, and they were just so happy for me to be there and for me to have my voice in the conversation. And I think what I've really come to learn is that, you know, as mixed people, we have, and we're all people really, you know, we have a right to speak and to take up space, but we also have a duty to listen and to make space. So I think instead of trying to think about whether or not, you know, should we be taking up that seat at the table, we should be thinking about, like, how can we use our access in order to create more seats at that table? And just coming back to your question about, like, how do we use that privilege, I think one of the big things that I'm trying to do with Both Not Half, and, you know, looking at expanding the idea of, like, heritage and cultural identity to national identity, has been, like, I think as mixed people, we have a real opportunity to use our experience to help redefine patriotism in the UK. Because I think, you know, Anglo-Saxon is a hyphenated word, which reflects the fact that the Kingdom of England emerged out of a real melting pot of migrants and Celtic Britons. You know, to be English, and by extension to be British, is to be mixed. And I think national symbols and national identity is crucial for societal cohesion and the success of a society. You need to have a shared identity in order to sort of have reciprocity. And so for me, that's what I know that, you know, the Union Jack, St. George's Cross have racist far-right associations. And what I feel that I'm able to do is I can quite comfortably, because of my appearance, I can use those symbols and confidently redefine them for what I want them to be, in the hope that then other people can do the same. But I'm not by any means expecting somebody who's, you know, visibly of the global majority to, say, like, walk through Luton, for example, waving a flag and expecting to, like, you know, just be like, have a lovely afternoon. I don't think that's going to happen. But I would love, I mean, that's what I'm really trying to do is, you know, yeah, redefine what it means to be an English and British patriot through the lens of the mixed experience.
When's your book out? I need to get a copy of that, that's for sure.
Sadly, not until I think April 2024. I'm very early on in the process at the moment. But
incredible. No, I wish I had.
But
that
some
same...
of this stuff is covered. It's in the documentary that I did.
Yeah.
I think there's something that you touched on when you were talking about the anti-racism statement on Blue Beta, and that, Jassy, you've definitely been talking about, is that it's any problems that are associated, for example, with racism, any problems to do with sort of a toxic notion of national identity, they're not on one individual to solve. It's all a community issue. And it's all something that we only do in tandem. And I kind of stumbled upon just the complexity, I guess, of my own identity when I really wanted to write a play about something that had happened in the history of China. And basically, in order to do it, I had to write a play in which I can't, like, quite a lot of it was just me explaining who the hell I am as a means of explaining why I was going to say the things that I had to say. So I thought it was a play about history and about war. And one of the first times I performed it, there was a woman who came up to see me afterwards, bringing her, like, slightly unwilling daughter. I was like, my daughter came to see your show a couple of nights ago, and she's brought me back to see it because she's got two parents from different countries and she hasn't really heard people talk about that experience before. And I suddenly went, oh yeah, this is massively a play about mixed identity. And I felt this real sense of kinship with this person, and it actually made me really think about mixed race kids as being a sort of club of our own. But I think in the wider sense, there's something really beautiful in the idea of going with glee and with generosity and Jasser, as you say, like, with a lack of fear about trying to keep everyone feeling comfortable, the more we talk about the diversity of who we are and the diversity of what our sense of living in this country means, and the more we're willing to sort of put cards on the table without that being something divisive, you know, to say I have this background and this background, and that doesn't mean that I won't talk to someone of these other backgrounds, but it means that that standing in this room and saying that all of your grandparents were born in one country for generations and generations and generations is not the only way to belong. And recognizing that some people feel vulnerable in some spaces where others might have the privilege to walk in, to open the door for others, that feels like, it feels like a good team effort to be making.
Yeah. You know, you were talking earlier about like, have we gone out like looking to pursue a sense of community and recognizing that. I think the thing that I've really come to love since doing all the Both Not Half stuff is I love getting into conversations now, regardless of what they look like or what assumptions I have, and trying to like figure out and help them realize what their multiplicity is. And in any conversation now, it comes up. I was, you know, it could just be that, you know, their mum was from Scotland and their dad is from like the south of England. And once I start explaining my experience, they self-reflect and they see that in their own experience. And I think I came to the understanding of talking about mixed heritage as opposed to mixed race because of the legacy of race science, but also because heritage, we all have mixed heritage. We don't all come from one singular homogenous place. There is diversity in all of us. And I think these are just the things that we think of as being things that mix are just entrenched narratives. And as mixed people, we have the opportunity to disrupt those narratives and draw attention to the fact that they are just narratives.
And besides, if you do come from one single homogenous place that's very, very, very close proximity, you might want to take a look at your family history.
Yes.
Might be some digging to do.
Interesting, Jessa, what you say. Like, you guys both mentioned when we talked about where we're from, moving around different parts of the country. Like, I find that question, like, I find having moved to Manchester about 5 years ago, I find myself more often trying to sort of justify a sense of belonging by going, well, my grandma was from Stockport. I'm really sorry, I sound like I'm from the south. But there's, yeah, it gets very granular, I think, very quickly. I have one final question for you both, which is, I guess it's thinking about the future, but it's also thinking about of these journeys as being personal identity. If you were going to go back in time and talk to your five-year-old self and explain to them who they are and answer that question for you of, you know, who are you, where do you come from, what would you want to say to that little mini you?
I'm not gonna lie, I feel like Jessa is far more qualified and far more intelligent when it comes to answering this sort of thing, so I might just piggyback off your answer.
Well, the first thing that springs to my mind is that because of my experience, the way it was, also growing up in Leicester, which is very much a mixed heritage city, I didn't feel the need to be asking that question. I felt fully myself as a kid. This is something I'm really having to get my head around, is that my sense of identity crisis, whatever you want to call it, that journey, that point of discovery for trying to figure this stuff out, came later in my life. But as a kid, I was living with my Punjabi grandparents. Like, my granddad was a turbaned brown guy teaching at my primary school. So even within my school, I didn't have to explain who I was or why that I did spoke Punjabi or, you know, was getting involved in the Diwali celebrations. Yeah, Leicester has the biggest Diwali celebrations outside of India. So I didn't know that as a kid, but it was just that in my mind, we all, you know, people celebrated Christmas and Diwali on the same sort of scale. So for me, it was, you know, the only thing I don't think I would say anything. I'd just be like, yeah, just keep doing what you're doing, you know, and just love it.
You messaged your five-year-old self is like, don't overthink this.
I think there is a real risk of overthinking some of this stuff sometimes, instead of just, you know, in a desire to explain, and because often we're not explaining for ourselves, we're explaining it for other people to make sense to other people, and actually most of the time we're fine. Like, we're just living and experiencing and being, and I think that's, yeah, like I was saying, you know, I think that's what kids need. I think it's what we all need, is to just be able to be.
Yeah, that's beautiful, and I'm not going to piggyback off the back of that, because I mean, A, I can't quite, but also B, it was far too nice for me to try and take any sort of credit from that. I would say first things first to my five-year-old self, everything will be fine. And secondly, I would say there's going to be a big portion of you that you feel like you're missing out on, but twist that narrative to there is a big portion of yourself that you can discover. And that's it. Because as I say, I'm as clueless now as nearly as clueless now as I was when I was 5 years old in lots of different things, but mostly my heritage. So, but now I've got an opportunity to sort of discover it and learn about it and create within certain boundaries a narrative with regard to myself, my identity and where I'm from as well.
I love that.
That's effortlessly beautiful, Richie.
Oh, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
I think I'm going to piggyback on you now.
Okay.
Because I think this is what the incredible thing about, well, the thing about the mixed experience, if you are mixed, there will come a point in your life where you have to, because of the way the world is organized, you have to reflect on who you are. Mm. And a lot of people who aren't mixed just never have to do that. Mm. Particularly if you are, you know, if you are a white, cis, heterosexual man, for example, yeah. You can go through life and the world, well, in the UK anyway, the world just tells you who you are, and you can sort of just breeze through up until death without having really had to take a moment to self-reflect. It's not to say that people don't self-reflect, but there's no real prompt to do so. But for us, there is that prompt. You get that at, you know, for me it was slightly later, for you it was your discovery in your teens. And it's, I think that is everyone needs to be doing that.
Yeah.
And I think what we can all take away from that is that there is so much about ourselves to discover, and you don't have to be mixed in order to be making those discoveries. But I think that is what, as a mixed person, it's almost like the gift that you've been given that you don't necessarily realize it's a gift, which I think is such a, such a wonderful way of putting it.
The wait, what moment I'm going to frame it as.
But I think what feels really important then, and I guess circling back to the topic of what it means to be mixed heritage in Britain, is I think what you're saying has been historically true for a really long time, but I think actually everyone now is being called upon to ask who they are. And I think that's making some people very afraid. It's making a lot of people feel very angry and very attacked or persecuted, or at least a little bit unstable. And I guess there's something really beautiful in being able to, For those of us who have had to do that for whatever reason, being able to just sort of go, hello, we've all done it. I'm sorry it's happening to you, except that I'm not, because, you know, as Richie says to his five-year-old self, this is going to feel really painful right now, but actually you have a whole joyous life of discovering who you really are. If you thought you had a stable sense of what that is and that's now being dismantled, or you're being called upon to question what that means, you've got to take that in a spirit of discovery and in a spirit of learning. And that feels like a very kind, but also potentially a very vital thing to be offering people in this country right now. I think as this huge national soul searching about the entire legacy that our country was built on. Yeah. So basically, in conclusion, we have all the answers. People just need to come ask us and buy your book, Jassa.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly. Once it's out.
Is there anything else that you guys are up to that we should be keeping an eye out for in the next couple of weeks, days, months, years? What are you up to that we should be looking out for?
No, just writing and just being anxious about not writing. Sat here thinking like, I should probably be writing. Yeah, for me, it's at least until next summer, it's just writing as much as possible.
Yeah, I guess, I mean, the day job obviously at Blue Peter, Fridays 5 o'clock.
Which is so cool, by the way.
Thank you. Yeah,
it's so cool.
Yeah, thank you.
I got a Blue Peter badge when I was a kid.
Good
and I'm
lad.
Like,
what for? I need to ask you.
I mean, I just wrote a letter in. It was amazing. Just like one of the standard. Yeah.
You got a badge?
Yeah. It used to come with like a booklet that told you like where you could get into for free and stuff. Like,
yeah.
It was a proper, like, it meant something.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I tried to write a letter when I was a kid, and I don't know if my mum even bothered sending it off, but
oh, he's just pulled on out.
Of course. I mean, I've always got to carry one on me at least. It's sort of my ID now, isn't it? So that's Fridays 5 o'clock on CBBC, but other than that, it's a little bit too early for me to plug forthcoming projects. But also, if you can, please watch a documentary that I wrote, produced, presented on BT Sport called The Special Ones. It's about goalkeepers, if you're into your football.
That's very cool.
Gorgeous. Thank you so much, guys. It's been so lovely chatting with you.
Thank you.
Thank
Loved
you so
it.
Much.
Thank
yeah,
you.
This has flown by. I didn't realise we were getting to the end.
No, I know. It's a shame.
Thank you so much for such an open and in-depth conversation about your own experiences as mixed race artists, a subject I'm sure a lot of our listeners will get a lot out of.
And as in every, at the end of every episode, we have to end it. But fret not, we do have an amazing episode next week on Muslim and the media. And we have some, of course, some very exciting guests joining us. So don't miss out. Please do follow us on our socials for announcement and check out our announcements. Do not miss out. Follow us on our socials for announcements and check out our website, tamasha.org.uk, and see if there's anything else that resonates with you. Also, if you liked what you heard, do go on our Twitter page and hashtag tell them and tell us your thoughts.
Thank you so much to Jude, Richie and Jasser for such an amazing conversation. Make sure you tune into next week's episode. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.